settle that case tonight. I said it's not too late. And I don't remember what I read. Don't remember what they said. I guess it doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. You're gonna go to the expert store. You're gonna give them all your money. They'll tell the jury what it wants to hear. They tell me it's cool, but I just don't believe it. Sell out with me, oh yeah. Sell out with me tonight. Insurance company's gonna give us lots of money and everything's gonna be alright. Insurance company's gonna give us lots of money and everything's gonna be alright.
Welcome to this episode of the Justice Team Podcast. That was our very own Grayson Goody to Real Big Fish, Sell Out.
Love that song.
So before we get started, we do have a very special guest with us today. He's a multiple trial lawyer of the year award winner up and down the coast of California. He has some monster verdicts, you know, eight figures, seven figures, but just a lot of complicated cases. But one of the people we all look up to is one of the smartest men always in the room, Arsh Mampour. Arsh, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we'd like to get started with a cocktail, as always, and we have Travis Davis, who is our Law and Motion Department. Travis, can you please come and show us what we're drinking today?
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. There you go, Bob. This is a take on an old-fashioned, using a mesquite-smoked whiskey from my home state of Arizona. Very smoky, very delicious, very smooth. This drink is called Where There's Smoke, There's Fire. It's a smoked whiskey. You also have habanero bitters and homemade simple syrup with raw sugar. And so the reason here for this drink is, you know, throughout litigation, you're looking at smoke signals, trying to find out good evidence, bad evidence. But when you're in trial, as you guys are going to be talking about today, you're in the fire. And so, yeah, I brought the smoke, and now you guys bring the fire.
You know, I love it, dude. I love it, man. You know what? This drink is my favorite one, too, out of, like, all the several we've tested. I just got to give it up to him. Wow.
It is a good one.
It's excellent.
Travis is the Simon Law Group Law and Motion Department,
dude, the guy
too,
is
by the way.
The guy's got a sword and a shield on paper.
This is actually just a ruse. This is actually an intervention for you, Arsh. This
okay,
is an intervention.
Thank you. Yeah. You're just torturing me right now. It's okay.
You're too good at your job, and you're too addicted to being great at your job. Yes. So, you know, we're here to intervene. So, before we always say, if you have any emails, it's media@justiceteam.com. We will get to some of your emails in a second. But first, I want to do some introductions. We have Sophie Adamati from the Justice Team. Sophie, say hello.
Hi, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Super. Thanks for asking. We have Sevi Willard Fisher, Esquire.
Willard.
Hello.
Thomas S. Fair, Esquire.
Sup.
And Sienna Collado Butte.
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes. Buenas tardes. Mm. All right, so we're going to get started right out the gate. So I want to hear, and I think our listeners want to hear, we're going to start with our special guest on this one. Kind of stories of inspiration. We want to know, a lot of people know you're a great trial lawyer, Arsh, but a lot of people don't know your background. So could you just share a little bit about how you, you know, why you got started and why you wanted to be a trial lawyer?
So I one day was a lawyer with no cases, no upside, no nothing, no job. And like I think all of us had to create something out of nothing. All I had was a drive and a passion to make a difference. And as cheesy as it sounds, that, you know, if you've got a little bit of talent and you've got some determination, it can carry you far. So like a lot of us, I started with really small cases, dog bites, soft tissue, neck, back injury cases. But I always knew that the same time you spend on that small case, you can spend on a big case and get a great result. And I use the example that I was literally like Kobe Bryant, just give me the ball and watch what I can do. Like literally, I just needed to get into a big enough game, get the opportunity, and I knew I could slam it. So
I got to ask you, like, what about your, where do you get that insatiable appetite from? Is it something you always had since you were a kid?
I No, I mean, it wasn't. I wasn't one of those. Is like I want to be a lawyer. I just fell into it. I remember I went to a Cala seminar and I saw Gary Dordick and I looked at him and I was like, he doesn't look like a lawyer. He doesn't talk like a lawyer. He doesn't act like a lawyer. But there's something about him that's so engaging and inspiring. And I said, if he can do it, I can do it. And then I realized, you know, there's no other job or profession where you can really make such a big impact, make such a difference with people that have, you know, nothing and, you know, need someone to fight for them and then get paid so well and then have so much fun as you guys demonstrate at doing what you're doing. You know, we have the best profession in the world, being trial lawyers. It's the
and,
best.
And I think everybody here has their different story, their different moment. And Arsh, we'll talk a little bit because you take some of the more, you took a lot fewer cases, more complex, and spend more time on them. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But I want to hear a little bit more about everybody's, because a lot of people don't know, you know, your story, where you came from, your roots, and why you're passionate, what you're doing. And I'm going to start with Sienna, because she's probably tried more cases than anybody in this room, you know, starting out in the DA's office, doing a lot of, you know, gang murders and sexual assault cases. And so, Sienna, how did you get where you are? And tell us, you know, kind of your background.
I grew up in San Pedro, California, to Panamanian immigrant parents, and I was the girl on the playground that always stood up to the bully, and, you know, from then on it switched from being the bully on the playground to the gang member to now insurance companies, and I feel like I've always had that passion to advocate for people who can't speak for themselves, possibly because my parents didn't speak the language when I was little, so I was the little interpreter slash advocate for them, and it just carried me through.
Who's more cutthroat, those gang members or the insurance company?
The insurance companies think they're cutthroat. They're just like wussies, you know? I think definitely the gang members.
That was a trick question. Of course, insurance companies. Tom Fair, why don't you tell us your story? A lot of people don't know it.
I have a very unorthodox background. I'm the son of, I'm first generation Hungarian-Romanian. My father immigrated here in 1950 from Hungary, from war reparations after World War II. I married my mom so she can get citizenship. About 25, 30 years later, she was a Romanian woman, escaped communism. And so I guess very early on as a child, you know, they told me stories as just a way to understand their history. And like, I learned this, like I'm like 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, hearing these things. And I guess I've always had a sense of, I don't know, justice. It's a weird word. It's nebulous, but it feels good what we do. Like, I like it. Like, how it's such a great combination of things that come together. Like, I think I echo everything Arash says. Like, we get to make money helping people and, like, going and kicking butt and, like, you know, telling a great story and being able to be validated and perform. It's a miracle, like, that this is an opportunity we get to have. And it's also rooted in, like, deep oral tradition. I mean, this is something that we've done for centuries. I mean, this is, it's beautiful. It's poetic. I can't speak highly, you know. I just, you know, sometimes when I really think about it, it's amazing. I'm just lucky I get to do this. Sorry, you know, long-winded, but.
It's true, man.
For our listeners, Tom's actually crying.
Well, I'm, you know, Arash is here. I have to.
Yeah.
Motion in limine.
You know, he gets me, you know, it's something about you, Arash. You know, you really touch, like, I listen to you, and, like, you make me think about things, like, in a different way. I don't know. See?
Yeah.
He's crying.
This guy.
That's good.
That's how good he is.
No, there's love. There's love in the room.
That's what it is.
There's love in the room. You guys, you all love so much what you do, and you exemplify that if you have a passion for it, doesn't matter how old you are, what you look like, you know, you can really make a difference. I think there's just big love in this room.
Now I know why the defense files motion limine, so that seriously, they filed one that Arsh cannot cry.
It's his eyes, I think. He's got like the, like, you know,
dreamy
eyes,
blue
the,
eyes.
The dreamy eyes or something that look at you.
Hidden behind this microphone.
Tom cried in our last trial.
I do.
Defense yesterday is like, I'm filing a motion limine on that next time. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't be the first.
So, Sophie, tell us your story.
Well, I tend to cry alone in bathrooms, but maybe I'll cry here today. Similar to Sienna, I mean, I'm a child of immigrants. My parents are Iranian. They came from Iran after the revolution. And I think just always in the family, there was, you know, this idea of, hey, we're in America. There's lots of rights here. And, you know, there's things called courtrooms where people actually get justice, you know, unlike in Iran. So I kind of just always grew up with that appreciation. And again, schoolyard bullies, just, you know, arguing over who's going to sit in the front seat with my brother and my parents as a child. It just, I don't know. I just always knew that this was the sphere I wanted to be in.
Sevi?
Yeah. I'm not the child of any immigrants or anything like these two, but I grew up in small town Idaho. Grew up being a big fan of my grandfather, who was a big part of my life. grew up listening to stories about him and watching how he succeeded in business. And he started out as a wash boy at a car dealership with five kids, hungry. I mean, his kids used to share, you know, clothing and all this stuff, and to the point where they couldn't even get by. And he eventually went on to buy this car dealership along with many others and be a very successful businessman. Big mentor of mine, the biggest mentor in my life. And then he was bought out by a big corporation, who then sued him for violating a no-compete order, which was bullshit. And I remember him saying, I was like 17, 18 years old, he's like, man, he's like, at that time he had talked, he's like, man, I think you'd be a good lawyer. He's like, I just wish you were my lawyer now, you know, so I didn't have to go through all this. And he ended up standing up in court without his lawyer and just saying that he's going to fight this all the way through. And they ended up, you know, ruling in his favor because of something that he did, not necessarily his lawyer, because he's just like, an older guy that said, I'm not going to back down to this corporation. I'm going to stand up for myself. And that's what he did. And he inspires me. He did inspire me. Fast forward, I mean, it's just sharing some of the sentiments that we've already heard from y'all, winning and winning big, both intellectually, in the courtroom and for our clients, it creates a natural body high that I can't explain. I felt this yesterday. I felt it with some big verdicts. And it is something that no drug, no alcohol, nothing could even compete with. I think, I've texted people, I'm just super jacked up right now. I feel like I could do any, I feel like I could take on like 20 people at once.
Putting heads through drywall.
Man, you do. You just, it's the greatest feeling, and there's nothing like it.
It's like 12 Mountain Dews.
Yeah, yeah. And surge. And no, it's those moments though that keep us, that get us through the downs and get us through the losses, because when you lose, it's the worst feeling that you've ever felt. You've got somebody's life on the line. So, that's sort of my story. That's what drives me.
So we've heard a lot of people from diverse backgrounds and cultural backgrounds. And we have two female trial lawyers here. So my next question is going to be to Sophie, Sienna, and Arsh, because the rest of us are boring white guys.
The other girl in the room. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know what it's like coming into the courtroom being a non-white guy. And what some things that you have to deal with, and some of those types of issues. So I'm going to start with you, Arsh.
Well, first, the beauty of this room is you have four kids of immigrant parents. My parents were Iranian American, born in Iran, came here, didn't speak the language. And, you know, the beauty of the struggle of being poor, of being different, of having parents that aren't like the Brady Bunch. And how, as a child, you can have embarrassment, you can feel different. But the beauty of that is that we are so blessed to have that perspective and that culture and that richness that when we grow up and we have the ability to, articulate a legal point, that it's that background and that difference that makes us even better. So I'm surprised why the two white guys here who are awesome have done so well. But I think that being immigrants it's like a power, power thing, because it really lets us relate to the struggle of our clients, and it lets us be articulate, and it's just beautiful that all of us, I think, have come from nothing and created something.
And I think that's a commonality with most trial lawyers is when you have that tenacity to fight. A lot of us came from nothing or humble beginnings. But I want to hear, did you find when you first started any type of animosity or uphill battle because of being a child of immigrants?
No.
Like that?
So someone came to me, and like a Persian lawyer at Loyola was like, I have a weird name and I find it difficult to be respected with a weird name, and people treat me different. And I looked at him and said, dude, I have the weirdest name possible, okay? It has never occurred to me that I'm a Persian lawyer. I personally believe that your spirit transcends your package. And Oprah is not powerful because she's a woman. Oprah's powerful because she's Oprah. Mm-hmm. And so when I interact with human beings, I'm not an Iranian guy. I'm Arsh. And I don't think if it was a woman or a man's body that I was in, it would make a bit of difference. My spirit is my spirit. I connect with people. And so I think that anytime you put that in your space, that I look different ultimately as a professional or I have a different name, that's on you. That's mm-hmm. you getting in the way of your greatness. Because if you're a powerful, loving, authentic, you know, inspiring human being, people will connect with you. It doesn't matter what you look like, where you come from. We all have different looks, different styles. And, you know, it's a testament to just be yourself and people will connect and relate to you.
And Arsh, you won the trial lawyer award, well, many places, but once in Ventura, which is known for a very conservative white area. Did you find you had to try your case differently there because your audience?
We all of us get, hey, this is a conservative jurisdiction. Mm. And yeah, if you've got a lame case with weak, you know, small damages, I avoided swearing. That was the stumbling. then jurisdiction is relevant. But if you have a righteous case with a righteous injury, the jurisdiction is irrelevant. Jurors are human beings. They're not your enemy. Sometimes you do obviously have to tailor your argument for what works in that jurisdiction. But I think a good case is a good case. Doesn't matter about the jurisdiction whatsoever.
And Sophie, same question posed to you. You know, being a female, how does it? Is it different?
I mean, apart from the, you know, little things like being mistaken for the court reporter or, you know, even videographer, I'm impressed that you would think I have that kind of technological skill. But I mean, I kind of like being underestimated. And I think in trial, I can see that the female jurors actually root for you and want to see you win and do well, you know, because I think part of them almost envisions themselves doing the same thing that you're doing. So, I mean, again, with Arash, I don't see myself as like, oh, I'm a female attorney and I'm at a disadvantage. I just, you know, try to be my authentic self.
Sienna?
I think you guys have echoed everything pretty much. I've never noticed a difference in terms of me standing out in comparison to the other attorneys until I switched to civil, where it's a lot of older white males. So I look around, I'm like, oh, I'm the only lady today, you know, and I just own it. But I don't see myself at a disadvantage. I like to be overlooked and underestimated, and then I'll show them when the jury walks in what's up.
All right, the next thing I want to talk to y'all about is how do we find balance? Because a lot of us, you know, it's a lot of feast or famine, a lot of running around. So I'm going to start with the fair bear. Tom, how do you find balance? Because you go from trial to trial to trial sometimes, 10 a year plus. You did 4 in a row. But how do you find that balance and have that family life?
You know, I mean, that's a question that everyone's going to have their own different answer. You know, you have to know it. Just, you know, I'm going to tell you my way, but that's not going to be your way necessarily. And the thing is, I'm able to work for long periods of time, for long hours. Like I get, you know, I obsess over a case and I get fully immersed in it and I live and breathe it, you know, and I adopt a lot of things that people do in theater or method acting, things like that, just to be fully involved. And so every cell and fiber of my body.
Are you a method trial lawyer?
I don't even know what that means, but
it means
method
math.
Man.
No, I think
they're
you
trademarking it right now.
Right, totally right. Well, I'll make sure I get some royalties on that. But I think the point is that you, in order to, for me, I like it when I'm fully immersed in the case, and I can do a few of those at a time because, you know, if you win, you want to do it again, and if you lose, you want to come back and win. So I like doing about 2, 3, 4 in a row. Back to back to back, have them lined up. And then I like to take a break. Like, give me, and it depends. I may be re-energized quickly for another reason, you know, whatever it may be. But I like to take like a week or two and decompress, spend time with my wife, with my dog, like, you know, my family, and maybe take a quick, like, you know, vacation or something. But you got to do something to get your mind off things. Like, I just went to Nebraska, and you're like, well, why would you take time off to go there? And I just spent 4 months trying cases. 4 trials, back to back to back, spent like my life in Orange County. I didn't even know there was a summer, which was okay. I love doing this. That's just the reality of it. And I went to Nebraska and something like, you know, being it's Nebraska, right? But I don't know, something about being in the heartland and out like away from the city and no traffic. I feel like my, like the heartland, just to me is symbolic of like how my heart beats strong and like how I want to go back.
Is this a Chevy commercial?
He's reptiling us.
But I'm just the saying, it made me think, like, I can't wait to go to trial on Tuesday. Like, let's do this, man. You know, F yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, yeah, let's go, dude. F yeah.
So, Sevi, you have two kids under three, right? Three and under.
Yeah, two and a half and under.
And then, so how do you find that balance being traveling, doing trials? And
you know, this year was my first experience with that because I just had my daughter in January. But what I do is, you know, I take a few weeks after each trial. What I do during trial is when I come home from court, I find that I'm not very mentally there anyway, right after court at 4:30 and 5:30. So wherever I come from, you know, Tom and I were in a 7-week trial in Orange County, and I would come home and, you know, I would just for a whole hour was just dedicated to my children. And I'd get on the floor and play with them and have fun. We'd go out back and, you know, do some putting and chipping on the chipping green. And you know, that was their hour. And then after that, I would just go downstairs in my office. The kids would be shortly after that, be going to bed. And, you know, I got in the time, cause kids, you know, especially at that 10 months and 2.5, you know, years old, they don't know daddy's in trial and why he can't come play today or why he's gone in the morning before, you know, when we get up. So I want to make sure, you know, I'm a trial lawyer. And, you know, I care a lot about my clients, but first I'm a dad. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, trials are always going to be there. I'm always going to, you know, I'm still going to put the work in regardless of whether I have to stay up an hour later or not. My kids mean a lot to me, and I don't want to pass up. I don't want to miss my favorite times and ages of their lives as they grow.
And Sophie, I'll pose this question to you. And if for those of you who don't know, Sophie does stand-up comedy on the side. So I want to hear a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, you know, I recommend everybody do it. It's a great way to make a fool out of yourself in front of strangers.
All right.
Thank you for the applause.
Can we play the crickets one instead, maybe, for Sophie?
Yeah, that's more accurate. No, I mean, I took some improv classes and then I took one, you know, like a stand-up comedy course, and then at the end of it, you go and, you know, give a performance, and, you know, I really enjoyed it, and, you know, it's something I still try and do, and
there it is.
Every now and then. I think it makes you comfortable, you know, just speaking on the fly. And
wait, when can we see you? Can you put a plug in real quick?
Like, I mean, I have some videos that I've
really funny
not
joke.
Released
I've
online.
Let's put her on the spot. Can you tell us a really funny joke?
No, when's your next performance?
I don't have one lined up yet.
We
I really
need to get
don't.
You a gig.
We do, but it's hard balancing it because it's, you know, you're grown up, you have a big girl job, and you know, it's kind of hard to balance.
Speaking
of balance,
Let's talk to Arsh because you've been in the game a lot longer than us, maybe 5 years plus. So I don't know. And I mean, you've got kids that are grown now.
I do.
Right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about you finding the balance. And I mean, because you've done a lot of trials over your career.
Yes. Well, I mean, my rule in my house is family first. So any opportunity I have to spend time with my kids, even though they're 21, 19, and 15, they ultimately come first because that's what matters. And just, you know, I think the way your firm has set it up is how it should be done, is that you create a great support system of talented people who love what they do, and so that you have the freedom.
Sorry, boys.
We're done?
Sorry about that. Okay. I don't know why that just turned on.
All right.
Grace so and spirit.
I think it's it's okay. Yeah, so it's good editing. So I think it's important that you have a good support system so that you can do what you're good at. If you're an amazing trial lawyer and you have a great support system that can help with depositions, help with trial prep, then you can focus on what you're good at and also have the balance of taking care of your well-being, you know, spending time with your family and being a well-rounded person. Because when you walk in the courtroom and you get up in front of a jury, you should literally be the best version of yourself.
You know, I just want to call, like, you know, I feel like is with firms, it's kind of like chickens that are caged up versus free range. You know what I'm saying? Like I know this is kind of like
related to food.
Always, dude. Well, food or sports, but like if you want good food, you want your chickens happy and running around and having a good life, right? But if you want like, you know, crappy chicken that needs antibiotics because they're always infected because they're shitting all over each other, right, in cages. Like in the same thing, like we're in the for the long haul, and I think we need to take care of each other. And that goes back to like what Arash was saying earlier about love and like We have to nurture each other and be there for each other if we're going to work as a unit, because we need each other. In order to be successful, nobody here can do it alone. Nobody. So we have to nurture each other and find ways to build off of each other and grow together so that we can be effective. And if we're not taking care of one another and be like, look, you need your time for your family and balance, and maybe you do need a month off, and maybe you do need to be recognized. Like, validation is an important thing. Like, people here are working for each other, but if they're not recognized or they're not seen for their accomplishments, that can bring down morale, and it can bring down the ability to work, you know, together. So it's super important what we're doing here and trying to be there for each other and giving us that opportunity, because I know I have it. Like, if I need a break or whatever, or Sevi, I mean, and it's great. It's a great working environment.
And I think
here,
all
totally.
Of us can. I mean, Sophie's single, but you know, a lot of us.
They're putting it out there, Bob.
Well, this is
Sophie on blast.
Her number is 818-30.
media@justiceteam.com.
Media for inquiries.
Dating Sophie, regarding Sophie. So, but a lot of us, you know, our spouses are very important. And I think a lot of us, you know, our spouses understand what we go through, and you're being there for us. And sometimes when you come home, you have that blank stare because you're practicing your closing argument or your cross examination. So I want to hear from Sienna, because she has a small daughter as well, and she's got Mike, that big burly firefighter that we all love. So Sienna, how do you find that balance?
I think it's a constant struggle, but I try to make it a priority. Mike's been with me for 14 years, I'm only married for 5, but he's seen me in trial well enough to know that when I'm in trial, I'm kind of in the zone and don't mess with me. But when I come out of it, I'm like, let's go to Disneyland. Our last trial you and I did in San Diego, literally the next day, as exhausted I was after 3 weeks, I was like, we're going to Disneyland, you know, because I need to like put in the time with the family and make sure that they know I'm there. And like I said before, I don't want to get fired.
Okay. Disneyland's awesome.
From my family. Oh. And not fired from work. And I think this is why I love you guys, because you really are a family at work too. Like, I remember when Desi was hospitalized once, and I like sent a message on the chat, and like 5 people were like, I'll take your depo tomorrow, don't worry about it. And it was like amazing to have that. And then Sevi and I were in trial once, and Desi was hospitalized for a couple days, and he's like, dude, just go handle it. And I was like, you know what, there's nothing I could do. They're just monitoring her. Mike's there with my mom. I'll be there at night. And it was hard. I was in trial, you know, all day, would spend the night at the hospital and come back at it. But that's, you know, you just kind of go with the
flow.
Yeah,
I think the first trial you did with us, we were out in San Bernardino. I mean, how old was your daughter? You came back pretty quickly.
3 months.
3 months old.
It's crazy. I totally agree with Sienna. And, like, you know, when we say, like, it's family first, like, here, I can't think of another, like, firm or even, you know, job where there's this much that's put into like everyone else's well-being.
And so, Sevi, I got to ask you this question. Do you ever get what's called dad guilt? Do you ever get that?
Dad guilt from who?
I mean, just you yourself. Do you ever feel that way to yourself that, you know, I'm spending too much time in trial or work? And
yeah, but at the same time, yes, yes, the short answer. Long answer is, you know, I rationalize it to, my family has a great life. They do. And my kids are going to go to college. You know, my wife gets the benefit of staying at home, being a stay at home mom, which is for the record, is the hardest job in the world.
That's true.
And you know, because of the sacrifices I make, if I have to be away from them during the day and in trial, you know, they get to live a life that I, you know, maybe didn't have, or certain things that I maybe wish I could have had and didn't, or certain things I had that I want to continue them to have. But yeah, to say I don't get guilty, sure. But that's why, you know, I don't ever ask for time off from you or Brad or anybody at this firm. I just send an email. I say, hey, I'm gone this day. And I've never been questioned about it. And so, you know, you take that time. You know, I probably take 5, 6, sometimes, you know, 7 weeks of vacation during the year. Who cares? You know, that's what you need to do.
You don't want to say that, bro. So, like,
just HR email coming.
Yeah, it's
sometimes
true.
I just take, you know, no, like 3 months, you know, off.
No, but serious.
He does all his depos.
No, because when you're in trial, it's like, well, you know, you basically just, you're working 16-hour days.
I know some people after one trial, it's like, dude, I need to bounce.
Right. Yeah. So it's true, though, because you make, you know, that time is, you know, you're not really taking, you know, if you get technical.
Are you ever able to, and it's hard for me, and I don't, don't know if I can sometimes, but how are you able to actually ever turn it off? Disconnect completely for any extended period of time. Arsh, can you do it?
We don't.
Well, here's the deal. You know, I'm a student of life, and mm-hmm. so I am always observing human beings, every situation, the differences, cultures. I get inspired by music, by food. I love my existence. I love life. And so I'm always on in that sense, always trying to inspire myself, whether it's a movie or a song, in some way to be the best, you know, trial lawyer that I can be. So it really is never off. And again, it's not a job. I love it. It's like jump out of bed. I think about my cases in the shower. I dream about them. Yeah. I write post-it notes everywhere. It's not a job. It's
how many of you here have post-it notes next to your bed yeah. or on your mirror in your bathroom?
Flashcards.
But so Arsh, what do you do? So what are other things that you're passionate about outside of law and being a dad?
Well, I love music. So, I mean, since I was a young kid, I've had a love affair with music. I tell people how, you know, you can listen to a song. You could be in the worst mood and one song can transform you instantly, which gives you access as a trial lawyer that there's a way to be in a courtroom that you can transcend whatever is going on and inspire people like a song can, like a dish can, like a movie can. But I love music, so I DJ in my spare time, and then I also produce music. And literally one of my goals I tell my kids is, you know, I'm going to be playing at Coachella, and I believe it's true because in America, all of us are
or
proof.
Or Coachella.
What? Well, I'm going to play there if you pay me enough and have my writer. But, you know, we're all proof that you can be anything and do anything in this beautiful world that we live in. And so if I aspire to be a DJ that plays at Coachella, I'm going to make it happen.
So the next thing I want to talk about is how do we get over our losses? Sharing our losses. And everybody does lose. I mean, unless you're willing to lose, you're never going to win, right? So, Sienna, how do you handle those losses?
I think you have to define loss, because I think I've won a couple of cases where I felt like it wasn't the exact verdict that I wanted. So mm-hmm. I felt like that was a loss for me. And, I think I did the Tom Fair approach, and literally the next day I was with you trying another case and kind of just getting back into it and getting your confidence back and advocating for the next client, learning from those mistakes as best you can.
Sophie, how about you?
Yeah, definitely tough. I mean, I tried a case with Tom and we got a verdict in our favor, but for not as much money as we anticipated.
I'm officially Tom, the low verdict getter.
I basically brought Tom down the entire trial.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. No, I mean, it's definitely devastating. And I think as lawyers, you know, a lot of us are type A, maybe just me, you kind of see it as a personal failure. And you're like, oh man, I just, you know, I stayed up all those nights and I gave everything and, you know, sacrificing time with people that you love. And then of course, your client that you feel like you failed. I mean, it's a lot to take on emotionally. But again, at the end of the day, and thankfully, you know, Bob is an amazing boss and, you know, sends me a heartfelt email saying, you know, I know you gave it your all and I'm still, you know, extremely proud of you and, you know, you should feel great about yourself. I mean, it's good to hear things like that and know that, you know, that's just how the cookie crumbles. And I both firmly believe that anybody who's great has had a lot of losses.
So I have a totally different perspective on winning and losing. You know, I try as hard as mm-hmm. as best as I can to let everything go, win or loss. So if I win a $60 million verdict, I guarantee you within 2 days, I feel like the same loser that I am. And I'm not saying I'm a loser, but we, you know, as successful as we are and as confident we are, there's probably masking a deeply insecure person trying to prove something to the rest of the world, especially as immigrant child. And so if I lose, number one, I probably shouldn't have lost. It was the defense cheated, the judge made a mistake, or we deserved it.
From your lips to God's ears. Sir.
But if I lose a case, I let it go because I want to operate from a space of nothingness. If I win a case and I walk around like I'm the shit and I am God's gift to everybody and my ego's on overdrive because I won a big verdict, the jury's not going to relate to me because they don't know my past, and there's nothing attractive about a person operating from I'm the greatest. Now, if I lose and I operate from I'm a loser, which is not in my vocabulary, I'm also not operating properly. People are not going to be attracted to or get behind someone that's like, I'm a loser. I don't deserve to win. So whether it's a win or a loss, I try my best to just let it go and operate from nothing and just be in the moment and be as powerful as I can be based on what I'm doing right now, not based on the past or not based on the future.
All right, we're gonna break up the segment. We do something, and Arsh, you don't know this, but we do a top 10 or top 5. We do top lists, and what we're going to do is we've pulled 100 trial lawyers. We don't know if they're really trial lawyers or whatever, but 100 lawyers. And we've come up with top six. This is the top six worst or most frustrating parts about being a trial lawyer. All right.
Family feud.
It's Family Feud style. So we're going to have two teams, and Arsh, you're at the end for the save. So the first one is, Fair Booty, right? Tom Fair and Sienna.
You want to go for it, Sienna?
Well, what's your team? Sophie and
Edema Fishy. Edema Fish. I like Sophie Fishy, though.
Oh, Edema Fish. It's got to be Edema Fish. All right, so we're going to actually start with Fair Booty. We have the top six worst or most frustrating parts about being a trial lawyer.
Oh.
Worst?
Worst or most frustrating parts about being a trial lawyer.
All right, can I go?
Is it our turn?
It's your two. You,
I'm ready
go
to
team.
Go. Is music going to play in the background while scheduling witnesses.
Scheduling witnesses does not appear on the list.
It's number seven.
Number seven.
Whatever.
Go with that. Go ahead.
Whose list is
this? We're going to go with Bad Judge.
Bad Judge appears number three on the list. You guys get to play again.
You want to do the other one we talked about?
Oh, sure. Just a defense counsel that's, overly obstreperous.
And for,
that may be too specific.
Can I Google that word?
Ding, ding, ding. That appears as number four on the list. Here. You guys have two. We got, actually, there are seven.
How about this? Kind of what we were talking about earlier, the time constraint, being away from family.
Ding, ding, ding. Being away from family appears as number two.
Another frustrating thing? Oh, another one we talked about. Loss, losing.
Does not appear on the list.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Hey, we don't know who these 100 lawyers are. Arsh.
What?
You get to pick now.
I pick who wins?
No, you get to pick. There's four more to go.
There's nothing frustrating about being a trial lawyer as far as I'm concerned.
He doesn't come from a place of negativity, everybody. No, he does not. All right, we're going to do one more for each side, and then I'll tell you what the rest of the answers were.
Oh, the food choices wherever you're trying your case.
That's ding, 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 ding. Number one is
that's
travel and
that's
food.
That's a great point. Great
See,
point.
You are good at this.
Yes,
you
I
are
am
good at this.
Food. I was just saying that.
Sorry.
Did you overhear me?
Yeah, jeez.
Arsh can steal. Yeah. Steal them.
So that gives us three more.
The venue, like the jurors. You know, it's like.
Number eight.
All right. Edifish.
Client control.
Ding, 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 ding. Client control appears. It's number five. All right, you got two more to go.
Jealous,
you guys can
Tom?
Go for the
jealous?
Full steal, and then I'll reveal
the
answers.
I'm totally jealous right now.
The look on me.
Waiting. To get
I'm in hard thought.
Waiting for a verdict.
Yeah, waiting.
Ooh.
No, that's kind of...
Yeah, that's bad.
Dude, that is not fun, bro. Waiting for a verdict is not
fun. It excites
fun.
Me.
That is the verdicts. Worst thing about being a trial lawyer.
I don't wait for verdicts anymore because it's too stressful.
See, dude,
there.
That's the worst
Peace
thing.
Out.
You can't even do it. You're a trial lawyer and you can't even do it. That's how bad it is.
That's your...
All right, so the two that we did not get were you can't make any social life commitments. The trial schedule. And number seven was
what,
you have the
kind
rest
of time in family, though.
There's weekends.
And the other one was you have all the other cases that are on hold.
I think that's great because I actually don't have to respond to anything until after I'm done with trial.
Yeah, so it's almost like a mini vacation. So we here, Justice Team, we have a team, so we have other lawyers helping us work on the cases. Now, Arsh, you have a different mentality at your firm. And, could you share that with us and why you like to do it that way?
Do what way? Do it by myself?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a poor delegator. I want to control every aspect of everything. And so my preference is to try typically cases by myself. I welcome input from other human beings, whether lawyers or whatever, because I want to see other people's perspectives. But my preference is to do the trial myself. Now, halfway through trial, I am like telling the jury, yes, I am sick of hearing myself talk, and acknowledging that, I'm dominating, but I prefer it that way.
Sevi, I'm going to start with you. What do you think is the hardest part of the trial for a trial lawyer to learn how to do well?
hardest part of the trial for a trial lawyer to learn how to do well? I would say voir dire.
Yeah.
I think, you know, an open-ended, everything else you can pretty much, I mean, it, I wouldn't say scripted, but you kind of have more control, I think, throughout the rest of the trial. I think voir dire, you got a brand new group of people, maybe going through, what, 40, 50 people in a given, you know, time frame for a given case. And I think just, you know, being able to shoot from the hip and having no real script as to what they're going to say or, you know, sort of the inflammatory things that they may say, I think that's the hardest part to learn.
All right. Sienna, your thoughts?
I completely agree.
Yeah. Sienna's known as the cutthroat cross
she
at her
is.
Office.
She that's bad.
She does. That's she bad.
She bad.
She bad.
Tom calls me the slicer.
Fair. I mean, does anybody have a disagreement with that? Arsh, what do you think about the hardest part to be just, well, do well at?
Not be reactive. I mean, mm-hmm. you just see so many times the defense mm-hmm. attorney gets reactive, gets thrown off, doesn't follow up, gets upset, and you got to keep your eye on the ball. Doesn't matter if the judge is saying your video's not coming in. Sevi was, you know, talking about how you just look at another way that you can deal with it. Go roll with the punches. I mean, I think the best trial lawyers keep their eye on the ball, don't get distracted by collateral issues, and keep plodding forward.
Always see the big picture. Don't get lost in one
Always.
Little loss. Right.
That's a life lesson, trial lesson, absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to learn about some trial lawyer superstitions. I want to know if anybody has them. I want to know what they are. And I've tried some cases with almost everybody in this room, but I know some of them, but I want to know. And I'm going to start with you, Sophie. Do you have any weird superstitions when you're in trial?
Just a very simple breakfast, like just like a piece of toast and butter, and that's it.
I don't even eat during trial, literally. No. I rarely eat during trial. Like,
so what do you
hard.
Do? It's just Red Bull?
No, Red Bull. I'll have like a protein bar, but I do not. You know, I walk up and you see the defense attorney eating burritos during lunch. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Do you have any other superstitions, Arsh, that
no,
you do?
Yeah, I don't wear a watch.
No?
That's my only superstition. No watch.
Sev?
I always, and this may you can be disguised as a superstition, but maybe just managing my expectations, I always am a little bit... I don't want to call it negative, maybe negative, but I'll be like, you know, Tom will be like, oh man, we're at least getting 50-50, you know, comparative max, max comparative on our client. I'm like, dude, we could get defensed, you know? So that's, I've been that way since I was in high school. I've always felt sort of like if I say the opposite, the opposite will come true. So I always do that and I keep that going. And sometimes to Tom's, you know, he gets mad at me sometimes. Good, quit being so negative. I'm like, dude, I'm not being negative. I just trust me, you know, because he's like, you're so negative. There's no way I can see this. So sometimes I think he questions himself because I'm sitting over there going, we could get defensed.
Yeah. So, Sienna, and I know one of yours.
Yeah, I like to wear gray for jury selection with like a pink blouse, soft color. I think it's more approachable. I always wear a blue suit for closing. And I like to... listen to Eye of the Tiger on my way.
Oh my god.
On repeat. I made Bob do it.
Is that for real?
That's for real.
Is that for real?
We listen to that song every day in my car. We were driving to a trial in San Bernardino. Okay. Eye of the Tiger before we pulled
it. I mean, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. Got in the mode.
Tom, fair?
I have like soft superstitions or more routines, and it's like, yeah, I always pack my own lunch, and it's like mm-hmm. two hard boiled eggs and like half a grapefruit. And then, like, I have to have salmon, like, every night before trial. I only rotate 3 suits, all white shirts and blue shirts. I only wear blue ties.
So he doesn't really have any superstitions, guys.
It's more like...
This sounds real soft.
It's just regimented. Well, you know, there's variation. But I have to, like, do certain things because it puts me in a comfort zone. And that's all, you know.
Sevi, your PB&J.
Yeah, that's true. I do have... If there's a Starbucks nearby, I always get the little box with the half PB&J because it's not too filling.
Yeah, dude.
There's a little bit of everything. You have some cucumbers and carrots, and then you've got the half PB&J.
And do you cut the crust off just like your mommy did?
My mom did do that, first of all. And second, no, because it's only a half. So
my mom used to take like little gingerbread cookies and... cut them out of the peanut butter
make
joke.
Little hearts and stuff.
Well,
yeah.
Our parents would put saffron on it, so you guys, at least you had a normal
what's saffron?
You guys had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I had liverwurst sandwiches on rye.
Lord.
Yeah. So my superstitions, I'm probably the worst of anybody. I have to use the same shampoo, wear the same shoes, I wear the same suit, I have the same socks, I have through every part of the trial for every different phase. Mm, and yeah, eat the same thing every day and
go home with the same girl every night.
God.
God, that superstition.
The button.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. This, so I have the same suit I've worn to pick a jury, every one of my juries. This brown suit that I bought from Hugo Boss when I thought I was big time for like $400. Yeah, it was a nice suit, right? But now it's a really old suit. But I wear the same one every single trial. And then I had missed a button the first trial that I did. And I was like, man, this is great. This is my suit of the people, right? I'm missing a button. And a few trials ago, this was last year, I come in, I'm getting ready to pick a jury. And my suit has a button on it. I'm like, what? Like, my wife must have sewed a button on my suit, and I freaked out, and I just ripped it off. And asked Ben Swanson, I ripped it off and threw it in the trash, picked a hell of a jury, and got a hell of a verdict. But I know to this day it was because I did not have a button on my suit.
Wait, did she sabotage you? Did your wife sew the button?
She had no idea.
No, she was just trying to be actually nice, right? Like, yeah. Sew the button on. And, you know, you can't do that.
Man,
nice.
Did she get an earful when I got, oh, my goodness.
So, yes, almost sabotaged.
That was the best question, by the way, the superstitions. I think we all have them.
Yeah, because it's and mine's, I mean, it's like, if I have a good day in trial, I have to do exactly the same thing I did the day
before.
But
nobody here actually believes that doing that is what manifests, you know, the good outcome, right? It's just the idea of putting yourself in the right mindset. The idea of what Arash was saying earlier is really being present. And keeping your eye on the ball and being focused. And so all these little routine things that we do beforehand is really a way to get us present as close to present as possible. And
I disagree.
Tom gets all philosophical on us.
I wholly
always
know. Whatever
there's
I do,
no such thing as superstition.
My superstition 100% predicts the outcome. I know when I watch my Pittsburgh Steelers, if I sit on the right side of the couch and I put my baseball cap on the exact right way, we're going to win that game. And I know for a fact. And if not, my grandfather, I swear
to God, explain them not
he
winning
the
Super Bowl.
The same Super when we Super Bowl won a few years ago, whatever. My grandfather was in the bathroom when he scored the first touchdown. You know who he watched the rest of that game?
In the bathroom.
Guess who won?
No, you're being facetious.
No, I'm not.
I want to hear about the beer.
Ask Frank Pinella, my grandfather. He watched the whole game in the trunk of a car one time when they won. Like, he gets it.
Sounds like kidnapping.
He's there to win. You know, you have to put that effort out there. But
connection with the beard, though? That's the beard.
With the beard?
Yeah, you've got something with the beard.
I'll tell you,
if
because
if you shaved, what would happen? That's what I want to know.
It's not good.
That's
but
a great
I wear
question.
The beard. This is a good question. The reason I wear the beard is when I first started trying cases very young, 25, right out of law school, I looked very, very, very young, and I wanted to look older, so I grew a beard, and it's been with me ever since. Uh-huh. But that's the reason why. Now it's more fuller than it was. But
I think there's a superstition associated with that.
100%.
Beard. Yes.
So we're going to wrap this up, and I'm going to do this. I want everybody to tell me who was their role model whenever you were a young lawyer that you looked up to. It could be one or two people, and we're going to go around the room and do it. Mm. And I'll start because mine were Gary Dordick and Arsha Wampour, because he was the first one that I came, my first Cal event, just like whenever you went to see somebody speak, you were mine.
Thank you.
I took one of your CDs home, and I plagiarized the crap out of all your stuff. So
we all steal from each other. Mine is Gary Dordick, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the nicest guy, seriously.
So
my turn. It's hard to say one. Just because I feel like I've watched them all.
You can mix. Like, pretend it's Dungeons & Dragons. We'll do strength, charisma, wisdom, intelligence, dexterity, constitution.
I'm not, you know, the first lawyer I watched do a lot of is you. Mm-hmm. And so you're a big role model of mine as well. But to leave Arsh, Gary, Panish, Ricardo, you know, Brown Green out of that would you know, I've stolen stuff from all of them. Arsh helps me a lot to this day. I mean, we were on the phone two nights ago talking about a new trial motion I had. So I would obviously have to include Arsh in that conversation as well.
Soph?
I'm going to go with Amy Solomon.
Nice. I love Amy.
Yeah, I saw her speak when I was in law school, and just amazing, crazy talented attorney and just a wonderful human being.
And she got to mediate a case of yours recently.
She did. And I was like, you're kidding me. You're my mediator. So it didn't settle, but that's fine. We're going to go to trial.
That's
great.
A good thing. Blessing disguise.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Gunn.
Gary Dordick. Arash. Brian Panish. Ricardo Echeverria. Nice. All those guys. Nick Rowley.
Sienna.
It's Bill Beverly. He was the first attorney I met when I was in college, and he mentored me through college and law school, and he's like a life mentor now. And now it's all the members of the justice team. We help each other out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to Life of the Trial Lawyer. Again, media@justiceteam.com. And we want to thank you guys for listening. Thank our special guest, Arsh. Thank you guys.
Gracias.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, there is
no
sleep till justice.
No, it's all yours, Boone. I saved it for you. I do.
Well, I know you don't want to be injured all your life, but don't settle that case tonight. I said it's not too late. And I don't remember what I read. Don't remember what they said. I guess it doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't matter anymore. You're gonna go to the expert store. You're gonna give them all your money. They'll tell the jury what it wants
to
hear. They tell me it's cool, but I just don't believe it. Sell out with me, oh yeah. Sell out with me tonight. Insurance company's gonna give us lots of money and everything's gonna be all right. Okay. Insurance company's gonna give us lots of money and everything's gonna be all right.